You heard me mention city groups a little bit earlier, and I'm in a city group. One of my favorite things about the time when our city group gathers is the opportunity to just catch up with people a little bit. And so we're always asking, how are you? How was your week? That kind of thing. And we actually have time to answer that question. But I want you to think about whatever space you're in, and you ask that question, how are you or how you doing? What's the most common answer you get to that? Aside from the kind of perfunctory, I'm fine or I'm good. What's the most common answer you get when you ask people how they are? I'm not going to do a poll of the room right now, but I bet if I did, it would be some combination of stressed, busy, or tired. Oh, I'm so busy right now. I'm exhausted. I'm tired this week. It's not the case everywhere in the world, though. A couple years ago, I had a chance to travel to Indonesia, and it was a frequent greeting there, although in a different language. How you doing? You know? And I can't remember one person. I'm thinking about it. I could just have a bad memory, but I can't remember one person over the whole month who said, man, I'm so stressed, I'm so busy, I'm just exhausted. In America, we love productivity. We love a hard work ethic. And that's not all bad, right? Like, as a result of loving productivity and applying ourselves and working hard, we've enjoyed a certain level of development here that isn't true of other countries like in Indonesia. That's part of the reason that we have things like running water that the people I was working with in Indonesia don't have. But alongside that development, we've developed some other things too. We've developed anxiety, we've developed stress-related disease, we've developed this kind of frantic mentality. We feel a pressure to be good at everything. So you feel like you have to be a great employee, you feel like you have to be a great spouse, you have to be a great parent, you have to be a great child of your parents, you have to be a great neighbor, you have to be a great friend to the people around you. If you're a Christian, you probably also feel like you have to do great things for God, and so just add that to your to-do list of all the other things that you're already supposed to be good at. You're supposed to be stylish, you're supposed to be in good shape, you're supposed to be eating healthy, on and on and on and on. And so what do? We work and we work and we work to make sure that we're good at everything. And when someone asks you, how you doing, you just can't help but think about, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I'm doing everything, and I can't seem to stop. As we get into the Ten Commandments, there's going to be commandments that probably don't surprise you, right? So there's going to be one that says, don't murder. You'd be like, okay, I kind of expected the Ten Commandments to say that. But today, the commandment that we're going to look at is a commandment basically to stop working, to stop busying yourself. And it's one that was totally unprecedented at the time that it was written. In the ancient world, this wasn't the kind of thing that you would turn around to other cultures and to other religions and just find this command sitting all over the place. It was surprising. And it's pretty foreign to our experience today. It's pretty foreign to my experience, if I'm honest. So how are you today? Are you tired? Are you busy? Are you stressed? You need this. Remember the Sabbath. That's what we're going to talk about today. And this passage is going to show us what the Sabbath is. It's going to show us how we remember the Sabbath, and it's going to show us why we remember the Sabbath. So look with me at Exodus chapter 20. I'm going to read verses 8 through 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Okay, so let's talk first about what is Sabbath. What does it mean? Well, the word Sabbath is a Hebrew word that comes from the verb to rest. And so at its basic level, the Sabbath day means a day of rest. And we're commanded here to remember this day of rest. Now, when the Bible talks about remembering, it's usually not using it the same way we would use it. When we talk about remembering, we usually mean recollecting a fact. So like, I remember where I was on September 11th, 2001. I remember that fact, okay? That's all that means. When the Bible talks about remembering, it's more talking about call it to mind and let it change the way you live. Let it affect you. So it'd be more like saying, we need to remember September 11th, 2001. When I say that, I don't just mean, hey, remember where you were? I mean, we need to remember it so that we live differently and our future is affected by what happened on that day. God is saying, you need to treat the day of rest that way. Intentionally think about it so that it changes the way you live. And what that means is to actually take this rest that God is commanding is going to require work and intentionality on our part. You have to actually think about it, remember it, and plan around it. Now, we're prone to forget it, right? That's what he's saying. You have to work to remember it. Now, why is that? Well, the people that this was originally written to, the Israelites they're called, they were an agricultural society, okay? So their work was tied to their food in a way that's not honestly true for most of us. Like, we don't see that link as clearly as they saw it. Like, if they wanted to eat, they had to grow it, pull it out of the ground, and get it on their table, right? So you think about it. If you wake up every day, you're hungry, right? And so they would wake up on the seventh day, and what would they think? I'm hungry. I'd like to eat today. I should probably work. Like, it would take intentionality. If that was you, and you knew the ground is what feeds me, to say I'm not going to actually go work today. Now, for us, we don't have quite that same relationship to our work, and so in some ways it's easier, right? Like, some of you have bank accounts with savings in them, and so you know if you didn't go to work for a day, you probably wouldn't starve. In fact, some of your companies are gracious enough to even give you days off, and so you don't run that same risk of I'm going to lose my job if I take a day off. And in that sense, it's easier for us to remember the Sabbath. On the other hand, there are things about our world that actually make it much harder for us to remember the Sabbath. The reality is, your work is still tied to the food you put on the table, right? You do still have to make money in order to provide. But not only that, in our world, the idea is if you work hard enough, you can put better food on the table. In fact, you can get a better table, and you can get a better house. And you know what? You could get a second house. You could get a third house. In fact, if you work hard enough and smart enough, you could even get to the point where you don't have to work at all. You can retire and live the last 30 or 40 years of your life doing whatever you want, or get down to the, you know, fantasy four-hour work week or whatever it may be. There's this thing that's held out to us that through your work, you can increase your possessions. You can get more, and you can get ahead. On top of that, being good at your job and being productive and advancing in your career is a massive cultural value. So if you care a lot what other people think of you, that becomes a really attractive way to get it. I mean, think about what is held up as exemplary in America. It's the people who succeed, right? The people who advance. That's our success story. The rags-to-riches story is part of the American dream, right? As Notorious B.I.G. once put it, he said, I made the change from a common thief to up close and personal with Robin Leach, right? He was a common thief, and what happened in his life, he got on Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, right? Like, that's the success story that we tend to look up to. And we think, because I can get there, I ought to. And if I'm not, I'm a failure. So if you don't produce something, who are you? You don't matter if you don't work, basically. On top of that, now we have a work situation where you can almost do it any time. It's hard to know when you're off in most of the jobs that we do today. So in the world that Israel was in, agricultural world, you're a farmer. When the sun goes down, you don't have a tractor that you can just fire up and go out there with lights and keep working. Like, sun goes down, day's over. There's no more work to be done. You can't light anything without a candle or something. But then electricity comes along, right? And now you can power things and you can have headlights. And then there were office buildings with outlets. And then at least you could punch out then, though, right? You could leave the office and go home. Now you have a smartphone, you have a laptop, you can take your work with you. And so there's this. The Israelites woke up every day and had to think about, okay, I better not work, because this is the seventh day. But you have to think about it every hour, every minute, because every hour of every day is now an opportunity for you to get further, for you to get more possessions, for you to get more prestige from the people around you, for you to succeed. And it's going to take intentional effort for you to remember a day of rest. Because what this does, all these factors conspire together and say, because you can get more, because you could get further in your career if you just work the extra hour, you better. You ought to. And so when you try to rest, you hear this voice in your head that says, whoa, 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 you could be getting more done right now. You're gonna take an hour and you're not going to work? What? No. There's things to do. And you can imagine how the Israelites had that same problem, right? They woke up in the morning. You're not going to work? How are you going to eat? You know, you can't get food on the table. And that voice in your head says to you, you're not going to work? How are you going to get ahead? How are you going to get that third house? You're not going to work? How are you going to get the praise of people? You're going to be a failure. Everybody's going to look at you. Look. And you keep hearing it and hearing it. And so it takes effort. Now, this day is not just a day of doing nothing, right? So when we're thinking about what the Sabbath is, we also have to think, what does God want us to do with that time if we're not working? Well, he says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Holy is a word in the Bible that means set apart or consecrated. It's a word that's used to describe God. God is holy, meaning he's not like us. And so when God says he wants us to take something and make it holy, it means we're to take that and set it apart from the ordinary of our lives to devote it to him in a unique way. So he's saying, I want you to take this day of rest and use it to devote to me in a unique way, which basically means we should be practicing worship of him on those days of rest. Now, if you're familiar with the Bible at all, you may be wondering at this point, but I thought every day of our week was supposed to be about God. Like, that there's a common misconception that, like, well, you have to really be holy on certain days of the week, and then other days you can just be your sinful self. No, like, God claims every hour of our lives, right? And we talk about that. And so this can be confusing. Well, what does it mean to set aside one day? You worship God through your work, right? And you absolutely should. But you're worshiping God through your work most days of the week. What God is saying with this is, I want you to worship me through rest, not through the things that you ordinarily do. So like when you go into your job, I'm guessing your job description for most of you isn't enjoy God today. That's all we want you to do. Enjoy God today. Some of you are in the medical profession. A lot of people in our congregation are. And when you go in, your job description for the day is probably something like help this person get to a condition in which they can walk. Now you do that because you love Jesus, right? You go to that and you say, I care about this person's body because God created the body and God is going to redeem the material world and I have a chance to show this person what the kingdom is like by helping them walk. I'm going to treat them with a certain integrity because I know they're an image bearer, and even when they're freaking out and I want to, you know, blow up at them, I know that I treat God that way and he hasn't blown up at me, so I'm going to extend that same kind of grace to them. And my boss today is giving me a job description that's ultimately under Jesus' lordship, and so his job description for me is Jesus' job description for me today. I'm going to serve him like I'm serving Christ. And so you're worshiping God through your work. But it's still worship through work. That doesn't make it bad. It doesn't make it less important. It's vitally important, okay? Don't put that down or wrong in your book. But it's not the same as setting aside time to say, I'm not going to do anything right now but enjoy God. And that's why we have things like this Sunday gathering. Your job description for your time here is to enjoy God. That's part of what makes it hard, actually, a time like this or setting aside time to read your Bible or to pray. It feels like it's not getting anything done. Like, I got this to-do list that's nuts, and I'm going to take an hour or, you know, whatever the time may be to, like, read my Bible and pray, or I'm going to come to a worship gathering and give up 2 hours of my Sunday when I got all these other things that I could be getting done. But what is that producing? And there's a sense in which it's getting something very important done, right? It's getting our sanctification done, like God's using it to make us more like Christ. But I also want to just affirm you for a second, like, you're right. We're not producing anything in this time, and that's exactly why you need it. Because we need time to just enjoy God for who he is and for what he's done, and to take a break from listening to that voice that tells you, what are you doing? You got to be getting something done. It's God through rest. That's what he's saying. Now, what does that actually look like? How do you do it? How do we remember it? That's the next thing that this passage shows us. So it says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. So the first way that we remember the Sabbath is we work for 6 days. Now, notice what this is saying. Work is not bad in God's sight. We just talked about all the ways that we glorify God through work. And some of you here today, when I was describing that person who just can't stop working, were like, don't know what you're talking about. I've never had that experience. I have no problem stopping working. I have a hard time getting up and going to work, okay? And I get that, right? You have to kind of be honest with yourself about which part of this command is hard for you. Is it the 6 days of work or the 1 day of rest? But work in this passage is absolutely a good and godly thing. He wants you. And notice the proportion even, right? It's not rest for 6 days and work on the seventh. It's I do have actual work for you to do that I have assigned to you, and it is good, and I want you to work hard for 6 days. And yet, I want you to rest on a seventh. So God isn't saying live for the weekend, right? God isn't saying just work until you can get a vacation, because you know what's really worth living for is that vacation. Your work kind of sucks, but you have to do it so you can afford the vacation. No, work is a good thing. Do it for 6 days, rest on the seventh. But he says, do all your work in 6 days. So this is a key way that we remember the Sabbath. You have to actually plan. You have to look at your life and say, how can I get all my work done in a 6 day span this week so that I actually have a day that I can enjoy God through rest instead of worshiping him through my work? That's going to mean conversations, right? That's going to mean talking to people who are close to you. If you're married, that's going to mean probably talking to a spouse and saying, what do we have going on this week? How can we get it all done in a time that is going to enable us to actually rest? If you have kids, now it's really important because you don't get a Sabbath day from them, okay? They're not going to say, hey, don't feed me for a day, you know? Like, I'll be fine on my own. No, you're going to have to figure out with your spouse what's it going to take for both of us to actually observe this principle of rest, given the fact that we have someone who's dependent on us. The Israelites, what they would do is on Saturday, they would gather double. God would provide double the food that they needed, and they would gather that so that they had something, they had leftovers on Sunday, basically. It's an interesting idea. We should try that. But they gathered their food on Saturday so that they had something on Sunday. So you have to think about, how can I do all my work in 6 days if I know what I have? You get to the weekend, you say, we got to get laundry done, we got to do this with our kids, we're going to this event, we got to get the groceries bought, we have to get our lunches packed. Just talk about it. What would it look like for us to get that all done in a day so that we actually have time to enjoy God through rest? Now, some of you think I'm crazy because you're like, you think I can get all my work done in 6 days? You're nuts. I need that seventh day. I'm already working all the time. There's no way I could get all my work done in 6 days. And what I want you to see from this passage is that you're just trying to do too much. God says, get all your work done in 6 days. That means he thinks it's possible, right? He looks at your life and he says, yeah, I think you can manage, okay? He knows how many hours are in a day. He knows how many you have. And here's the dirty little secret. If there were 8 days in a week, you would say, there's no way I could get all my work done in 7 days and rest on the eighth. And if there were 9 days in a week, you'd find a way to fill that too. It's not true. So who's telling you it is, right? That's the interesting question. If you feel like I have to do so much that I could never do it in 6 days, who's telling you that? For some of you, it is your boss, right? Like, some of you do work in jobs and are in certain seasons of life where they're just pounding you. And you can tell them, I want time off, and they're just going to say no. And that's part of the reason this passage is also addressed to people in positions of leadership. So it says, you shall not work, but also you, your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, your livestock. He's saying, basically, if you're someone's boss, it's also your responsibility to make sure that they have the opportunity to rest. So for those of you who are in management positions, who have that kind of authority over people, this means also making sure that you're freeing their lives up in such a way that they're able to genuinely rest. But some of you have bosses who don't care, right? And you can't control what you can't control, right? If they're going to do that to you, okay, you have to submit to your boss in some ways. But have you actually tried? Like, have you actually just had the conversation where you've said, hey, I would like to take a day off. Once a week, I would love to not be scheduled on this day. Some of you haven't because you're so afraid of your boss. You're so afraid of displeasing them. You're so afraid of how they would respond to you that even having that conversation feels undoable and unattainable. Have you looked into other jobs? Maybe a job that wouldn't get you as far on the possessions goal or as far on the prestige goal, but that would enable you to genuinely rest. Is it really your boss making you do it? Maybe it is, okay? If that's the case, I'm not here to judge you or guilt you about that. You can't control what your boss does. But I am saying, are there steps that you could take to move towards this? If we're honest with ourselves, for many of us, it's not our boss. It's not our boss. It's us, right? It's we feel this need to do more. And we get to that day, and that voice shows up that says, you're not going to work. How are you going to make more money? How are you going to get ahead? What if you lose your job? Who's going to put food on the table? Huh? Huh? It's my love of my money that's keeping me doing it. It's my love of prestige, right? I need to be good at something and to produce so that others will look at me and tell me that I'm somebody and that I've accomplished something. And so another hour goes by. I got my laptop. I got my smartphone. I can get something done. I better go do it. Taking rest to not produce anything? And so you load your life with stuff, and of course you feel like you can't get it done in 6 days. And what I want to tell you is that it's not God telling you to do that extra work. God does not give you more to do than you have time to do. Like, think about a day. If you feel like someone is demanding 26 hours of work out of you in a 24-hour day, it's not God. He just doesn't do that. He gives his people work, but he gives his people rest also. So who is it? It's not God, but it sure is strong, right? That force is strong when it hits you. That argument in your head. Think about for the Israelites. Think about it. Like, that's a good argument. If you don't work today, who's going to put food on the table? Yeah, that's tough, right? And so it's really hard to remember the Sabbath. It's really hard to remember to rest. So what do you do? Well, one of the common approaches, Israel broke this command all over the place in the Bible, right? Because they get in tight spots, right? Food's getting tight. There's a famine in the land. Okay, now we really got to work. We got less resources. There's a battle coming on. Well, can't take a break, right? We could get killed. There's always work coming up that they feel like they need to do, and that's going to happen in your life too. So another thing they tried was, let's just put a lot of rules and regulations into place. Let's just try to really narrowly and clearly define, here's what you can do on the Sabbath, and here's what you can't do on the Sabbath. And then we'll know that everybody's obeying and keeping and remembering the Sabbath. That doesn't work either. Here's why. Think about it. If that voice in your head is still ringing, what is that voice basically saying to you? The voice that says, if you don't work, you're not going to get ahead in life. It's basically saying, productivity is God. If you don't work, you don't matter. That voice in your head that says, but if you don't work, who's going to put food on the table? What's that really saying? It's saying, you're God. You're in control of your life. If you don't do it, no one else will. You're the only one you can ultimately trust. Now, if that's what you believe, rules aren't going to help you. Because you're actually just going to take those rules and use them to control your life and to feel like you're somebody. You're going to say, well, because I keep the Sabbath so well and because I obey the rules so well, now I know that I matter. I may not get work done, but that's a worldly thing. I get the Sabbath done, right? And now I know that I'm somebody. And now I know that I'm in control of my world because I keep the rules. And God kind of owes me things now because I've obeyed him so well in my keeping of this Sabbath law. And that's what developed alongside of this trend of disobedience was a group of Israelites who said, we're the ones who keep the rules. And so they spent their Sabbath day sweating whether or not they were keeping the Sabbath well. And the irony is you never actually rest, right? Because you're stressing the whole time. Are we doing this right? And on top of that, now you've got a new job to do. You have to go out and police all the people that aren't keeping your rules. And so this is what the Pharisees of Jesus' time were doing when Jesus comes on the scene. They're going around and telling people, here's why you're breaking the rules and why you're not remembering the Sabbath. And so Jesus butts heads with these guys. Because Jesus kept the Sabbath, and yet he did things like he fed the hungry on the Sabbath. And he healed the sick on the Sabbath. And they got mad at him because they're breaking the rules, right? We already laid this down. You can't work on the Sabbath. Here you are. And how does Jesus respond to them? He says to them, the Son of Man himself is Lord of the Sabbath. What's he saying? He's saying something greater than the Sabbath is here. And when he calls people to follow him, this is how he invites them. He says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He doesn't say, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you more work. That's not Jesus' invitation. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Now, how could Jesus say that about himself? It's because he's true God in the flesh, the one who created the earth in 6 days and then rested. And he came to do something to give us a greater rest. He came to finish and accomplish the work of our salvation. Why is work so burdensome? Why is it so hard? Well, the Bible traces that back to the very beginning of the Bible story. It's not actually, work wasn't created to be burdensome. In Genesis chapter 3, when the people turn against God, he says he will send thorns and thistles to our work. When we make our work about our possessions or our prestige, it yields thorns and thistles. Like if you make your goal in life, I have to advance in my career, your career is going to end up being miserable. It's going to be stressful. It's going to kill you. And in fact, even if you approach your work with the most godly, best disposition, stuff's just not going to work sometimes, right? That person didn't reply to that email. My computer's not working. The internet's down. Stuff's going to come back and mess up your day. It's all part of the curse on humanity's sin. But what Jesus has come to do is to bear that curse in our place. He was crucified with a crown of thorns. The thorns and the thistles are the ones that he took when he was nailed to the cross in our place. And he rose from the dead to everlasting life, to Sabbath, to rest, no more work to be done. He's now enjoying the presence of God in heaven in a body that will not wear down, that will not be burdened, that will not be touched by thorns or thistles any longer. When he is on the cross, he says, "It is finished." The most important work, the only work that can really curse you, the only work that can really reward you is finished. Hebrews 10:12 says that when he made an offering once for all sins, he sat down at the right hand of the Father. He sat down. The most important work of your life is already completed by someone else. And now, he invites you, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Because he offers that same resurrection life that he's enjoying now, that Sabbath that is his right now, becomes yours when you trust in him through faith. You get him. You get the risen Lord Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, when you come to him. And yet, if you do that, you could do that today for the first time. You could come to Jesus today for the first time by praying and accepting him into your life. If you do that, the next day you're still going to be in this body, you're still going to have a job to go to, and it's still going to be hard. And so what does that mean? How do we remember it today? Well, we remember the Sabbath as a principle rather than a law. The law has been fulfilled. Jesus came, he's the Lord of the Sabbath. If you have the Lord of the Sabbath, you're no longer bound to the Sabbath law. But you're still in this body, right? And you're still in this world that was created by the God who worked 6 days and rested a seventh. And so, it's still incumbent upon us to apply the Sabbath principle in some way. Now, not everyone agrees with me on that. There's people, Christians, who believe that because we're still in this old creation, because Jesus hasn't returned and we haven't gotten resurrection bodies, that this law is still binding, that you must rest one day out of every seven and not work and do the things that this law requires in the Old Testament. And I think it's an area Christians are free to disagree on. Again, even within our elder team, we have at least one elder who would take that view. But I believe that because of Colossians 2:16 to 17, it's not just like this is hard, so let's tone it down a little bit. It's that Jesus has really fulfilled this, and that's where Colossians 2 directs us. It's going to be on the screen behind me here. It says, "Therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink, or with regard to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ." You see what he's saying? He's saying the Sabbath is important, but it's a shadow. It's a shadow of the greater rest of the Lord of the Sabbath, Jesus. And the message of the Bible is you do have Jesus now. If you have trusted him, he is yours. You are in him, and you are seated with him in the heavenly places in Christ. And so I think it's an area Christians are free to disagree on. We're all responsible to apply the principle, but how we apply the principle shouldn't be a thing that we're judging each other on. God's given a lot of freedom in terms of how that principle is applied. So let's just talk through, these are some suggestions on some principles that we learn from the Sabbath that can find expression in some way in our lives. I'm going to run through these kind of quickly, but these are 8 principles of how the Sabbath can shape our lives. The first principle we see is the proportion. It's a resting of 1 in 7, right? So that should give you a good idea of about how much work rest should I be working into my life, right? I think it makes a lot of sense to just do what it says. Take a day of the week and rest on it, and don't work on it, and just plan to do that and get all your work done in 6 days. Some of you may find that's not possible, but you could do a half day one day and a half day in another day, but I think the proportionality is important. Also, throughout the Bible, there's Sabbath feasts that are longer. In fact, there's even a Sabbath year, every 50th year, where they don't work for an entire year. And so it's also important to think through ways in your life that you can be building in other rhythms of rest. So for each day, for example, there should be time where you're saying, "I'm not working anymore," or a definite time when your work starts in the day. There should be times in your life, if you get vacation days from your company, you should take them. Even if you don't have money to go on a nice, cool vacation, stay home. I don't know, but take them. Use your vacation days and think about taking extended times of rest as well. So rest 1 in 7. Second principle, worship on your day of rest. And so that's why a lot of people find Sundays is the best day to do it. I think Sundays make it's kind of like a default option to have as a day of rest, as a day where you're not working, because we're going to gather for worship every Sunday morning. But to also think about spending time meditating on Scripture, praying, going to God in worship. Think about if the problem is that this voice is ringing in your head telling you you have to work, you're going to have to combat that with something. And if you don't, you usually end up just giving your day to stuff that's not actually restful. You got to be honest with yourself about this. Like, basically, you want to fill your day with things that are going to stoke your affection for Jesus, right? They're going to make you love him more. And sometimes that's not just what's most fun, right? Like, I've noticed on days where I'm not intentional, I kind of have a day off, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to do whatever. I end up spending a couple hours on stuff like fantasy football, and I think that's going to be restful, and yet I get done with it a few hours later, and I don't actually feel more rested. I don't actually feel greater affection for Jesus, because what I end up doing is I try to control my life by being awesome at that, and I try to prove myself by being really good at it, right? The voice wasn't combated. I just found other work to justify myself through, and so worship becomes an important part of that. And again, think about a daily rhythm. What's time you could set aside daily to devote uniquely to a worship practice with God where you're not getting anything done? So worship on your Sabbath day. Third, spend time with people. People are not the enemy of rest. God often says that one of the ways he gives us rest is by letting other people bear our burdens. And so this isn't a day to just be alone. If you're an introvert, you need time like that, okay? That's fine. Schedule some time for it. But again, this is why Sundays make a lot of sense. You're going to gather with other people on Sunday mornings. Fourth, sleep. Sleep on your day of rest, okay? Think about not setting an alarm. You just don't wake up to an alarm. If you have kids, again, talk with your spouse, figure it out. But take a nap in the afternoon. One of the biggest indicators of trust in the Bible is the ability to just go to bed and to say, God, I'm just going to take a break from controlling the universe for a little bit and let you do it because I wasn't doing it in the first place. Next thing, enjoying God's creation with thanksgiving, okay? So rest is enjoying finished work. That's why God rested on the seventh day, to enjoy his finished work. When you take part in recreation, hobbies, that kind of thing, you're enjoying God's finished work. But do it with thanksgiving. Do it intentionally. Some of you are like, nah, I got plenty of time. I do really well at my hobbies. But often that stuff kind of happens to you more than you're choosing to do it. So it's like a long day and you're like, oh, I'm so stressed out. I don't know what to do. Let me just flip on Netflix. And 4 hours later, you've just binge-watched another season of some sitcom. And it wasn't so much that you chose to do that, that you said, you know what, it's going to be a really God-glorifying choice and use of my time right now to spend my next 4 hours on it. And look, I'm not just, it could be, right? Like, you might actually say, this is a way that's going to stoke my affection for Jesus right now. I'm just going to enjoy the freedom I have in him to watch TV for the next couple hours. Like, people do that on their day of rest, that's fine. But my point is, usually that's not what's happening when you're doing it. Usually it's, I'm stressed and I need a release, and so I'm just going to let myself have this. And what you find is 4 hours later, you're not actually more rested. So you got to be honest with yourself about this stuff. Like, I've noticed for myself, spending 12 hours of my Saturday and Sunday watching football, while sounds attractive to me, doesn't actually give me rest. I don't get to the end of that and say, wow, I feel so much more rested. So I just have to be honest. But I do like watching games, right? So I watch, you know, if the Eagles were playing today, I would watch an Eagles game. And I would go into it saying, thank you, Jesus, for this awesome Eagles game. If it's a good day, you know. That's a good gift from God, right? Like, how cool is it that because he's running the universe, we can take a break and, like, watch people throw footballs around? Like, it's silly, but that's the kind of grace that God's given us, and so enjoy it. It does help to plan unplanned time sometimes, like to take 2 hours and say, I don't know what I'm going to do with this time, but the only thing I'm not going to do is work, and whatever else comes up, I'll just do it. The principle that we learn that from is throughout Israel's history, there was time when they were to let the ground rest so that whatever plants wanted to come out could just come out. So this kind of might be things that you want to do, desires that you have that don't really have space in your life to come out. You create space where you say, whatever wants to come out can come out. One time I was like, I have a guitar. I never play that thing. So I busted it out, broke a string, couldn't do it. But anyway, you know, I didn't know I had that desire, but it came out because I planned some unplanned time. So if you're worshiping first, it'll help that time to actually go in a God-glorifying direction. Similar to that principle, limit your technology use. Okay, that can be a really helpful thing to do. Part of the reason God gave a Sabbath too was so that your stuff could rest. So notice it's also that your livestock should be able to rest and the ground gets a break from being worked in a farming society. Most of our work is done, depending on your field, but a lot of us do work at a computer or on a phone. And so it can help to give your stuff a break too, and to just say, okay, I'm going to set aside time where I'm not using technology. And there's studies on overstimulation and what that does to your brain and all that. But anyway, that's another suggestion. Last thing I'll say, let yourself be interrupted, okay? So yes, you want to set aside time, you want to rest. But one thing we see in Jesus' life all the time is that if somebody was in need, if somebody needed healing, he didn't say, whoa, I don't work on the Sabbath. There's a genuine need. He was willing to be interrupted. You have the Lord of the Sabbath, okay? Don't become a Pharisee. Don't say, I have to do it this way. It has to be perfect. You're missing the Sabbath if that's how you start to think about a day of rest, something you have to hold on to that nobody else can interrupt. Let yourself be interrupted if there's a genuine need. You're going to need other people around you to help you with that, because some of you are people who think everything's a genuine need, everything's an emergency, so you just end up working your entire Sabbath day. Some things can wait till tomorrow, okay? So feel the freedom in Christ to say, I'm not going to do anything about that today. That can wait till tomorrow. But where there's genuine needs, you know, feed the hungry, clothe the needy on your day of rest. Okay, last thing. Why should we remember it? The reason given to us here is simple. We remember this because, in verse 11, in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. We remember the Sabbath because the Lord is our God. On the Sabbath, when you rest, here's what you're saying. I'm not God. We should say that together, okay? We're going to practice this. Ready? On the count of three, we're all going to say together, I'm not God. Ready? One, two, three. I'm not God. Isn't that amazing? That's what you do when you rest. Now, you're human, right? So you do work, but you're not God. God is God. So you work 6 days and you rest a seventh. So it's really important that when that voice comes up that tells you, whoa, what are you doing? You got to work. That you have something to say back. This is what you say back. The Lord is God. You have to almost be defiant about it, or else you spend your rest day feeling guilty for resting. I probably should be working right now. That's the problem of not planning it, by the way. If you just get to the end of your day and you say, I just need to blow off some steam. The whole time you do it, you're not resting because you think you should be working the whole time. And the whole time you're working, you think, man, I just wish I was resting. But if you plan it, you know it's coming. And when you do it, you know, I don't need to be working right now. And you can say back to it, the Lord is God. That voice that says, you're in control. If you don't put food on the table, who will? You have an answer. I don't ultimately put food on the table. The Lord does. I don't ultimately grow these crops. You know, the farmers knew that. I don't ultimately run this business. I don't ultimately control this person's healing. I don't ultimately control this account that I'm managing. I don't ultimately control this person's body that I'm working on. God controls that. He's the one upholding the universe by the word of his power. I'm not in control of any of this. Take a day to enjoy that. When that voice says to you, but you're not going to get any possessions, you're not going to get that extra house, you know what to say back. I have eternity with Jesus. He's been risen from the dead. I'm going to get riches in him that can't compare to the riches that I could get here on earth. If that voice says to you, but you're not going to get prestige, you're going to fail. People are going to look at you and see that you haven't gotten anything done with your life. What have you accomplished? How old are you now? And what have you not gotten done? You have something to say back. No, the Lord is my God. I'm accepted by him, not by what I do. In fact, I have to come to him with nothing in order to be accepted by him. It's only because Jesus finished the work that I'm received and accepted. Productivity is not God. What I do isn't what makes me who I am. God's not judging me based on how much I produce. He's judging me on the work of Christ and on what he has produced. And he said, it is finished. It is complete. Look, you don't have to rest 7 days a week, okay? You're human. God gave you dignity that you could work and have an impact on the world around you. When the alarm goes off, get up and go to work. But you're not God. You're not God. So you don't have to work 7 days a week either. Take time to remember that by planning and fighting to not get things done and to simply enjoy the Lord who is your God and who is in control. Enjoy trusting him. Enjoy resting in the finished work of Jesus on the cross, all looking forward to the day when we will be with him, when we will have our resurrected bodies, and every day will be a Sabbath day of rest. Remember the Sabbath, but more importantly, Remember the Lord of the Sabbath.